few minutes. Sexy in Van City. Take care, all.
Sweet scent of roses, the oak floor creaks, shadows on the high tin ceiling, a fiddle weeps. Through the open window, pale moonlight, ghostly dancers at midnight. Rustle of crinoline, a silky white dress, twirling around across the floor they step. The faintest smile plays upon their lips. They lean closer in a kiss. Sweet Santa roses, the oak floor creaks. Shadows on the high tin ceiling, a fiddle weeps. Through the open window, pale moonlight, ghostly dancers at midnight. Her sweetheart died beneath her father's knife. She felt such sorrow, she took her life. They threw her lover to an unmarked grave. They find each other when the fiddle starts to play. If you look closely, you'll see a woman's form, through suit and trousers, creased and worn. Her father's anger could not keep them apart. Still they dance to the beating of their hearts. Sweet scent of roses, the oak floor creaks. Shadows on the high tin ceiling. Through the open window, pale moonlight reveals two women at midnight. Mangan,
and you are listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver and surrounding university area.
They want to be loved by robots, need love too. They want to be loved by you.
Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Montana soon, just to raise me up a crop of dental floss, raising it up, waxing it down, in a little white box that I could sell uptown. But by myself I wouldn't have no boss, 'cause I'd be raising my lonely dental floss.
just might grow me some bees, but I'd leave the sweet stuff to somebody else. How about you right over there? And then I would keep the wax and melt it down, pluck the floss and swish it around, and I would have me a crop. Poo-poo, ta-da-da, and poo-poo, ta-da-da.
Moving to Montana soon now, gonna be a dental floss tycoon.
Whoopee, tie-o, tie-ay.
Moving to Montana soon, well, gonna be a metal toss flacoon.
I wonder what that means.
Well, 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 that was a little bit of Frank Zappa, and I do mean a little bit. I wasn't expecting it to end so abruptly, but that was a little bit of Montana and a lot of Frank Zappa. And if you're just joining us right now, you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR, and we are going to be talking about a really, really, really sexy topic that is important. And when I say sexy, I mean sexy equals healthy, which healthy self-esteem, healthy body, healthy relationships, all those things are really imperative. So in that regard, we're going to be chatting tonight about something that's been really important, and you probably read about even in the morning paper today if you're in Canada. And if you're hearing this from the States, because if you're listening live, where you can either listen on 101.9 FM on CITR, or you could be one of our podcast listeners, and you could be listening as well on live as we speak. It's streaming it at CITR.ca. So one of the things we've been chatting about, of course, is prostate health, and why it is so imperative to take care of yourself, feel great. And we're going to talk about some of the four top myths in regards to prostate cancer. And I've got a very special guest on, which I'm looking forward to chatting to him. And his name is Dr. Diefenbach, which I'm looking forward to having him on the show. And welcome to the show. Oh, I can't hear you, so let me just see technically if there's something I need to do. Let's see if we can try that again. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And you missed the abrupt ending there with the Zappa, where it just disappeared, even though it was really important. And I guess I should probably explain to our listeners as well that Frank Zappa died of prostate cancer. So I think even though he's a really wonderful, sexy artist who's just really neat, it's something that's affected a lot of really talented people. So it's important to be taking care of it. And especially in Canada right now, we are in the middle of November, where men are growing beards and collecting pledges to raise funds for prostate cancer. So I'm really excited to have you on the show so we can talk about some of the myths about prostate cancer.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a very befitting topic. One of the myths are that people, when they're diagnosed, thinking that they are that cancer or prostate cancer is a death sentence. Really does not need to be that way.
Okay.
So what that means is that, of course, everybody who gets a cancer diagnosis is frightened and is anxious and is worried about the future and about the treatment and all of the horrible things that people might think about it. And I don't want to minimize prostate cancer, but one of the good things is with this particular kind of cancer is that it is a very slow-growing disease. It's a very slow-growing tumor. And because most of the patients are being diagnosed through screening.
Mm.
And they are being found or diagnosed at a very early stage.
Okay.
And that's a good thing.
That is a really great thing. So how early should men start being tested for prostate cancer?
Well, so this is just to be sure that the screening does not save lives.
Okay.
So it helps you detect it. But given that it is such a slow-growing disease, studies have not shown that actually it is necessarily beneficial for the patient in terms of saving lives. But it does. Uh-huh. It has the advantage that it detects it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So when you are detected earlier, then you have to make a decision what kinds of treatments you want. But going back to the screening and your question, it really depends.
Okay.
So if you, for example, have a family history of prostate cancer, then the guidelines are that patients should be tested at around the age of 40, 45. And if you are of African American descent, then that's the same kind of thing. If you are older, then maybe with 50, maybe.
Okay. What are some of the things, because you mentioned in there about a death sentence, and in our pre-show chat, you'd mentioned that you've got a fantastic website with lots of resources on there, just to help guide people through it, because it's definitely going to be a shock when you find out, A, that you've got cancer, because you're right, people a lot of the times do believe it's a huge myth that it has to be a death sentence. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your website and some of the options that might be there for people?
Yes.
Some support.
So thank you for asking about that. So once a patient is diagnosed with prostate cancer, the question is, how should it be treated?
Mm.
Or should it be treated at all?
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it so difficult for men to decide is that they really have lots of treatment options. So there is, of course, everybody thinks about surgery. And if you think cancer, well, surgery takes it, you cut it out. That's sort of the first idea that a lot of men have.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also have it treated with external beam radiation. And you can have, there's another, a third option, and that is brachytherapy, which basically means that small radioactive right-sized pellets are inserted into the prostate around where the tumor is. And there is this radiation that goes from the comes from the inside, concentrated. It doesn't leave the body.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes the tumor to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there is the options, if you are really caught very early, that you might not want to be treated at all. And there are programs that are called active surveillance, where men have biopsies every 12 to 18 months and more regularly PSA testing, and the progress of the disease, or maybe even the plateauing of the disease, is documented very, very carefully.
Mm.
And then the patient then can wait a little bit and can always decide to be treated later. So it puts the patient in a very difficult situation, because regardless, so he has those four or five treatment options. And then he goes to different kinds of physicians representing different specialties,
mm-hmm.
and they all tell him that he should treat the cancer with the specialty that they are most familiar with and that they are mostly trained in.
Hmm.
So that really puts a lot of the burden of the decision making onto the patient.
And that can be really challenging.
Yes, it is quite challenging, because not only is the patient who is then diagnosed is distressed, he has to learn lots of medical terminology. He has to deal with some information that is often presented in statistical terms. There are probabilities involved. There are percentages involved. And not everybody is familiar with these kinds of terms. So
mm-hmm.
not only are they distressed and have deal with the medical diagnosis and the emotional impact, but then they also have to learn this medical lingo.
Mm-hmm. And that's a whole new language, which when you're already stressed, which I'm sure isn't really conducive to healing to start with because it's kind of scary, it doesn't put in very happy, healthy things. So in terms of some of the options and things on the website, is it meant for people like me who are more lay people as opposed to medical professionals?
Yes, okay. Exactly. That's what it is.
Okay.
So we have converted all of the information. This is information that is approved by the National Cancer Institute of the United States.
Hmm.
And so we have taken that information and then put it in a format that is easy to understand. We
okay.
have used the metaphor of a health center. So there is a physician room where we have videotapes of different physicians representing different specialties,
hmm.
and they talk about their treatment options. And every physician answers similar kinds of questions, but from their perspective.
Nice.
And so the patient then can compare the answers without actually leaving home. So he gets a very good understanding of what the issues are. There is a library where everything can be read again, and then there is a section where survivors talk about their experience, and that always has to be, that always is very, very helpful to patients we have found, because they like to know what other what decisions and what experiences other men have had.
And I imagine with that it's great, especially with the whole internet, etc., just because in that way there's, I know it's going to sound weird, but basically they don't have to speak out loud, where they can do that in the silence of their own home when they're ready to take a look at that.
Right.
So, in realizing that they're not alone, that there's other people who have gone through it.
Exactly. Especially in a topic that is
sensitive,
that threatens a man's masculinity, and that many men might not feel comfortable talking about.
So mm-hmm.
it can be familiar at their own leisure and learn about it, and then talk to their healthcare provider about
what their options are.
They think are right for them.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you mentioned in terms of one of the myths is that prostate is not a family issue, and the fact that it is a family issue, because obviously if one person has something that's troubling them, especially something that's affecting their health, it affects everybody.
Right. That's exactly right. So it's so if the man, for example, decides to get treated, and there are medical issues that have to be dealt with, then usually it's the partner then who deals with lots of these kinds of issues. There are medical issues in terms of catheter care, if they had surgery for about a week or so. There might be side effects that affect their sexual function and the urinary function that can affect the relationship. There might be beliefs about masculinity that are affected, and so it really is something that can affect the marital quality and the quality of life
mm-hmm.
of the men as well as or the couple.
So, what are some options that perhaps as women or if men are in gay relationships, what can our partners do to actually support, and if one partner is diagnosed, to make them realize that we still love them and we care about them and make them still feel like a man?
Right. Well, I think the most important thing is that the partners inform themselves so they know what the medical issues are,
mm-hmm.
That they then try to talk about these things, because I think when you talk about problems with your partner, if you talk about your feelings, if you talk about the fears that you might have, then if you have that trust, of course, I mean, you just by talking out loud about these things, I think there is a much greater understanding and appreciation being fostered.
Mm-hmm. What would you recommend in terms of for men who have to tell their partners, by the way, I've got prostate cancer, so then that way they're not dealing with their partner's emotional duress as well? Like, what's a good way to, like, where it's like, honey, you know, I went to the doctor today, I've been diagnosed, like, giving it straight, or, and obviously it depends on the situation, the relationship, but if you knew somebody who has prostate cancer and they had to start telling the people that are closest to them, especially if it's a life partner, because of course they're looking at insurance and other things in their homes and perhaps taking stock in terms of their wills and estates.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think that it is a process that the partner and the patient have to work through. Mm. And again, I think for the partner, it is also important to realize, and maybe even more so than the patient, that it is not a death sentence.
Yeah.
That it's okay for the patient to think about the treatment options that mm-hmm. they have. It is okay for the patient to take some time to think about it. I mean, all, of course, if there is an early stage disease, as I said before, is the case for probably 95% or so of all of the cases that we are encountering. So I think that's very important to realize. And then also for the partner what I have seen often is that the partner tries to push more for the perceived aggressive treatment.
Mm.
And what I have also seen is that some men might say, well, you know what, let's just wait a second. I don't know whether I'm comfortable with surgery right away. Maybe there are other options. And the partner being scared, being worried to potentially lose her partner or his partner, mm-hmm. then pushing for this more aggressive treatment option that might really not be appropriate or might not be in the best interest of the patient. If the patient says, well, you know what, maybe there are other options, let me consider that first, then I think that's a good choice that should be supported by the partner.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely.
And that actually is the myth number two, that the patient needs to have treatment immediately.
Mm-hmm. Because you said it's a long-spreading disease. Do you find sometimes that patients, because of the fact it's long-spreading, that they don't tell their families right away? Because it's almost like denial, because it's like, well, it's not going to happen tomorrow, so I may as well just forget about it and not go for treatment right away?
That's possible, too.
Okay.
That's possible, too. I don't see it. We have not seen that very often, though.
Okay.
I mean, there are patients who are what we call blunting, and they try to avoid the topic at all. But usually that is not. Usually they try to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, sometimes they try to deal with that by themselves, and they're not readily forthcoming
mm-hmm.
to their partner or their family, and so that's an issue that they have to work out then.
Yeah. No, that's true. In the States, how did you find that September worked? Because that was Prostate Awareness Month, was it not?
Yes, September was Prostate Awareness Month. This has been going on for a number of years now.
Okay.
So there are, I think a number of years ago, there was a stamp that was put out. There are support organizations organizing drives or rallies, and overall we try to raise the awareness
mm-hmm.
and talk about it and bring it out in the open, because we believe that more information is better, and the more that the patient knows about the disease, knows about all of the options that he has, and the more the families know about the same kind of options, the better the patient is served.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You mentioned in terms of marital relations that especially treatment, how does the different treatments affect, like just in terms of health, you're mentioning in terms of urine and possibly, I don't know if that, I'm imagining that means sexual relations, but correct me if I got that incorrect. Like in regards to as they're going through the process of trying to trying to see if it's curable at all, if it's...
Well, I think the good news also with prostate cancer is that the 5-year survival rate is almost it's 95% or so.
Wow, that's great.
So a lot of patients who are diagnosed in their 60s or so, if they have, let's say they have a heart condition also, they might die of that condition before they die of prostate cancer.
That's fantastic.
So on the one hand, that's the good thing. Oftentimes, though, the cancer really overshadows everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the other health issues might be pushed in the back,
mm-hmm.
in the background. So I think it really has to be looked at as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But were you asking whether there are different kinds of statistics with regard to side effects depending on
just things like, for example, if you'd mentioned earlier that sometimes men feel it's demasculinating in regards to being diagnosed with cancer, and I can understand that because I know it's just stereotypical if you look back in time where we used to be, you know, we had the cavemen and the cavewomen, and men, you know, are supposed to be the inner society even still, even though we've equalized things a bit, men are still considered to be the big strong ones. So I imagine when there is disease, sometimes they take it personally, and I was just curious if it affects erectile dysfunction or anything like that.
It does, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It does. And there are various degrees of erectile dysfunction, and this can really be very distressing to men if they have erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
I think the goal of any treatment is to spare the nerves, to reduce the potential side effects. And it really depends on the skill of the surgeon, if you're talking about surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And it also then depends on where exactly the tumor is located.
Okay.
From anatomically, the nerve bundles run through part of the prostate. The prostate sits like a donut around the urethra where the urine flows out.
It's and like a donut. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hmm.
So it has to, it takes a lot of skill to remove it, or to partially remove it, or to radiate it so that that the tumor is eliminated without damaging the surrounding tissue.
Hmm. No, that makes sense. I just found it interesting when you mentioned it's shaped like a donut as well. Last week I had the girls from, we've got another campaign going on right now for Pap Awareness Week in regards to cervical cancer. And what's interesting is they've been trying to make it where it's really cool and very empowering to take care of yourself, and that's one of the campaigns. And I like to think of Movember, which is the one where the men are growing the beards here and raising money for prostate cancer here. So we've got the two campaigns pretty much, you know, within the same time frame, more or less. And what's interesting about that is my guest I had on last week was actually describing the cervix as almost donut-shaped. So it's just interesting. So
yes,
it's just like,
right.
It sometimes surprises me just in terms of just the familiarity in terms of male and female anatomy sometimes. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, there's certainly parallel in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
You were mentioning the empowerment, and I think what one of the goals of our program is to empower the patient to take charge of their treatment decision. And we try to do this by giving them information and by helping them to clarify what is important to them.
Okay.
So that they know that they can maximize the different kinds of treatments and fit them to their values and their goals that they have in their in their future. And so that's one of the overriding goals that we have: patient education and help them identify what is important to them.
So in regards to that paint, walk me through this for a second. So let's pretend I'm a gentleman and I've been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I'm coming to because I want to see what my options are. So basically, what would I go through? Basically, so I'm Mr. Jones.
So Mr. Jones diagnosed by a family physician.
Okay.
And the family physician gave him a PSA test. They talked about it. Mr. Jones agreed to have the PSA test, so that's the ideal case.
Mm-hmm.
And then the PSA test came up high.
Okay.
So it was above the magic number here is four.
Four, okay.
And then a family physician then says, well, Mr. Jones, I think you should see a urologist. And the urologist then, who is trained as a surgeon, will repeat the PSA test, because mm-hmm. the PSA test is not a perfect measure, and it can be affected, or you can have elevated readings for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if your prostate is inflamed, you have an elevated reading. If you have had sex the night before you had the blood drawn, there might be an elevated reading. So it's always good to have a second reading, or maybe even a third reading if it is borderline. And then the urologist might say, well, I think we should do a biopsy. And the prostate then will be biopsied, and there are different kinds of tissue samples are being extracted out of different regions of this donut-shaped gland.
Mm-hmm.
And the tissue samples are then examined under the microscope, and if their cancer is found, then the pathologist can assign a preliminary grade or stage to it, and that is called a Gleason score. And that
Gleason score
then, yeah, it is named after the physician who invented that grading system.
So they offer a Gleason score.
Yeah, and then depending on what the Gleason score is, the patient then that is a measure of the aggressiveness of the tumor. So if it is between 6 or 7 or so, that's sort of a medium to low grade tumor, and then the patient then has the option to talk about the different treatments.
Mm-hmm.
So then Mr. Jones, because he talks to the urologist, he might say, well, I want to talk to another urologist.
And get a second opinion. Okay.
And at that point, we would suggest that Mr. Jones then calls us up and be part of our program, be part of our study, where he would be getting particular information about prostate cancer, and he could then inform himself just as we discussed it beforehand.
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. And with that treatment, are they able to bring their partners in with them, so they're able to actually come up with a plan that might work together?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think that's one of and in most of the cases, the partner is involved in that.
That's awesome.
Oftentimes, the partner is what we found is that the partner is the person who asks a lot of the questions, who takes notes, who has oftentimes a better handle of it, because the patient himself is oftentimes, you know, quite
is almost
stressed.
In shock.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're in shock, you really don't learn that much.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes perfect sense.
So we have been talking about this website, and
mm-hmm.
It's called prostatehealingchoices.com.
I like it.
And the word really, or the name really, justifies or signifies what we try to do, that the patient has choices for their healing.
And that's absolutely imperative, I think, when people feel that, especially if they see it as a death sentence immediately, that they don't have any choice in the matter. So it's probably really important to remind people they do have choices to start with.
Exactly. So it's not a death sentence, and they have time to decide. Surgery is not the only treatment that they have available, and it not only affects the patient himself, but it affects also the family, and also what we haven't talked about, the brothers or the sons, the first three relatives, because if you have prostate cancer, then the chances are slightly elevated that your first-degree relative might also have prostate cancer.
Wow. And is there, in terms of which side of the family does that fall on, is that more on the male side or the female side, or does it not really matter?
I don't think it matters.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't even know whether we know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So that's something perhaps some of the research projects that people are doing might be able to help with that. So,
right.
Just out of curiosity, do you have anything like Movember in the States where people are growing, where men are growing bushy beards? And it, to be honest, it reminds me of playoff season here, which I don't know how you guys are about hockey, but here it's a huge big deal, not just during the Olympics, but in general. And so men are getting these great bushy beards, which... I know last year when they had Movember, I had a friend of mine who actually at her spa was actually doing beard services for men, because I kept joking that it's like kissing a bowl of like shredded wheat. So it's kind of disgusting. But, you know, even though I get, and it's a really good cause to grow it, because then, of course, they're, you know, raising awareness, because when a man sees another man, especially like across this country at this time, who didn't have a beard before, it's like, okay, are you doing it for Movember? And it's like, yes, do you want to pledge some money? And so it's making it really fun. It's a really good community builder, I think, as well. So it's a good way to get awareness. And so men of all ages are doing it. So
no, I think that's great. And that's something that we should adopt. I don't think that we have something like that here.
I can put you in contact if you want with some of the organizers, if you'd like, after the show, because I can always email you with that. So
yeah, that would be great.
Okay, because I think it would probably be really lovely to spread it, because you guys are doing a lot of the really great work. You've got a lot of all the resources in place, and then just getting the awareness out there, which I commend the fact you guys have Prostate Month in September. That's fabulous. And just taking it one step further with the marketing and just getting it going forward.
Yeah, I think that's mm-hmm. great. I think that would be, it would really raise awareness, and it would show that one in three men could be potentially affected by it.
One in three men potentially affected by prostate cancer.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's a lot. That's really, really high. How long has prostate cancer been around, I guess, like where we've actually been able to diagnose it? Always been around, but where
yeah.
we've actually recognized that this is a type of cancer and things, and this is
that it really got with the start of the PSA era, mm. the prostate-specific antigen testing area, started in the early, late 80s, early 90s. There was just a big spike in diagnosis of prostate cancer, just because we all of a sudden had a tool that could detect it earlier.
Okay.
And so, and one of the reasons then is that we have a lot of physicians use that tool, and so there was a spike in prostate cancer diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
and that should not be confused that there was more prostate cancer. It was just that all of a sudden it was easier
to diagnose it.
To diagnose it, right.
Okay, and I have a silly question. What is, because obviously PSA is an acronym for the test. What exactly does that stand for? Because tests in broadcast world, that means public service announcement.
Right.
So
prostate-specific antigen. So it is a little protein that is released by the prostate cancer that is being picked up.
Hmm. Okay.
And so but as I said before, it's not a perfect test.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it's important just to basically be taken care. In terms of when somebody goes in for a prostate test, like I've heard men joke about it and stuff, why they won't go in for one because of the fact it can be a little bit invasive. So is there anything that you'd recommend in terms of like when people have to, especially if they've been diagnosed and if they have to keep going back for tests year after year, since it takes a long time for it to basically affect us in a really severe way?
The screening procedure is the PSA test is just a little blood test.
Okay, so it's not the thing. Okay,
so that shouldn't be. Now then there is the other procedure that's called the digital rectal exam. Where the physician is inserting a gloved finger into the rectum and feels the prostate, and I can see that it can be a little bit embarrassing or uncomfortable, but I think patients should remember that physicians do that, then, or the urologist does it so often, and it's really not, it doesn't have any other connotations than just an exam to feel the prostate. And they should think about women who do pap smears and other invasive procedures all the time.
That's true. And it's interesting you say that. Actually, last week we had a group called White Orchid, just in regards to the Lace Campaign Girls, on. And it was really interesting, actually, because it was a group of ladies from the South Asian community, where apparently in India, one of the number one reasons why women pass away in terms of disease is actually cervical cancer, because virginity is so highly prized, and it's also a cultural thing just in terms of that, and just that they've been trying to advocate and educate that that you can still get which I actually was surprised, didn't realize you could get a pap test if you were still a virgin. So I was like, that's interesting. So
yeah, I didn't know that.
Okay, no, neither did I. I was really surprised. It's like, really? But I thought that was interesting, and just raising awareness that, and just educating the men as well in their community, which they were mentioning just that it was interesting where they've caught their boyfriends and husbands, for the women who've been involved with the campaign, actually being able to look at it online, which the internet has really, really helped in terms of getting the information out there, but where they can do it in a way that they feel comfortable, like getting the information.
Right, and there is, and you mentioned cultural differences, and of course there are cultural differences and cultural beliefs that are more prominent in certain groups than others. And again, there I think unbiased information, unbiased education to patients is really important, so that that patients don't make treatment choices, for example, or prevention choices that are based on these kinds of cultural beliefs that have no basis or very little basis in medical fact. And we know from research that decision making among patients in general is very much influenced by the things that they have either experienced themselves or have seen other patients or relatives go through, where they then say, well, you know, that's not for me because somebody else has had that experience, and I'm sure I don't want to have that happening.
Yeah. So that's really important. So do you think in terms of the internet, that where that's made a lot more of the information accessible?
Well, you know, one of the reasons why we decided to develop our own site is that the internet can be your friend, but the internet can also be your curse.
That is true.
Because there's just so much information out, and a lot of the information is not necessarily accurate. It might perpetuate beliefs and myths that are not helpful to patients. And if one is not medically trained, I think one has difficulties distinguishing between the good information and the bad information.
That makes sense, which is why I imagine it's important in regards to just having a really strong campaign when you're doing awareness. So I imagine with volunteers who are really involved with Prostate Awareness Month in the States, just as the ones who are getting involved in Movember here, where it's almost like there's really strong key messages, so everybody is basically speaking the same language, keeping it really simple. And then that way the information, it's being able to spread fast, but in a way that's accessible, where it's bringing it back to the medical source.
Right. That's exactly right. So education and unbiased information is really, really important.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a really quick short break, but when we return, I'm going to ask you just in regards to thoughts about prostate cancer and what we can do in terms of a society to educate our youth about it, and just creating awareness and what we'd like to see 20 years from now. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
AMS Sexual Assault Support Center offers support services to survivors of sexual assault and other forms of violence, as well as their friends, family members, and partners. They are committed to education and the support of students, staff, faculty, and visitors of all genders. They offer counseling, accompaniments, information, and referrals. They also facilitate specialized workshops and training sessions, develop public education campaigns, and hold special events related to anti-violence work. All services are free and confidential. For more information on programs and services or on volunteer opportunities, visit their website, www.ams.ubc.ca/SASC.
Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
And we are back. If you're just joining us now, you're listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And I am talking to Dr. Diefenbaum, which I'm really excited to have him on the show because we've been chatting about prostate cancer, and especially for you Canucks out there who have been growing your beards, even though you've just started, and I imagine you're going to be keep growing them longer and longer, or if you're listening from the States because you're really actively involved in Prostate Awareness Month, which was in September in the States, welcome, and I'm hoping some of the answers we've got will be very helpful, especially if you've got somebody really near and dear to you that may be suffering from prostate cancer, or you think that they should be getting checked out because they've had a relative that may have had prostate cancer that's in close contact with them. But whatever the reasons, it's really important. And Michael, I'm going to get you, if I could, to please just plug the website as well, just so people can see what the resources are out there.
Yeah, it's called prostatehealingchoices.com. It's all one word, prostatehealingchoices.com. There's also a telephone number that patients or the partners can call, and that's a toll-free number, 1-866-258-7981.
That's fantastic. In a perfect world, what would you like to see? Like, if you could wave a magic wand and go forward 20 years from now, what would you like to see in terms of prostate cancer and just awareness?
Well, what I would like to see is that we don't have prostate cancer anymore.
Fair enough.
That, of course, would be the best scenario. Then I would be out of a job, which would be fine. But at least I think a lot of men would be helped.
Mm-hmm.
And but on a realistic basis, really, I would like to see that men are seeing this as something that can be dealt with, that it is not a death sentence, and that they have many, many treatment choices,
mm-hmm.
and that many survivors can lead healthy, productive lives with and adjust to being a prostate cancer survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the area of sexual functioning, there are, I mean, even if in the unfortunate event that patients experience erectile dysfunction, that there are other ways of expressing sexual interest and intimacy
mm-hmm.
With your partner that does not necessarily involve the usual intercourse.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of ways you can pleasure each other without
exactly.
having intercourse, where if you look at it as almost a challenge, which in a good way, where it's like to get to know your partner and finding other ways to please them.
Right. And but I think that's a learning process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something, again, where the partner can be immensely helpful.
That'd be great. You know what? I'm actually going to connect you right now with, because it turns out the co-founder and CEO of Movember Foundation, and they raise awareness and funds for men's health. They're actually in the States, actually. They're from Venice, California.
Okay.
So, which could be neat as well, and that's Movember.com. Just in regards to that. Which, so for people who want to grow the bushy beards this year, you can do that. And it's interesting because I actually thought it was a Canuck thing, but it's we've got a Canuck chapter, obviously, and we're doing it right across the country.
Right.
But as well, so I'd be curious in regards to States, because that might be a really good contact as well, because you guys are doing a lot of the really practical work. And if they're raising awareness, that might be a nice partnership, possibly.
I think that would be great. So you can send me or email me the contact information. Then I think that would be a really good partnership.
Mm-hmm. I think it could be too. That'd be really great. So,
yeah.
No, I think it's really exciting. So, what are you hoping in the next year when you have? Next year for Prostate Awareness Month in the States, what would you like to see in terms of some changes that are a little bit closer to home? Because I know 20 years sometimes is harder to see.
Well, one of the things, there are some exciting developments on in the basic sciences that are a little bit, that brings us a little bit closer to identifying some of the disease mechanisms. Then there is also some treatment for patients who have recurring prostate cancer,
mm-hmm.
that might become more widespread. But for us and for the work that I'm doing is that we really need more research in how patients deal with this the diagnosis and the treatment choices that they're taking, and we need more or a better understanding of how we can help patients adjust to the diagnosis and then to survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
So one of our next projects is to focus an internet site and for prostate cancer survivors, so that they can adjust to their survivorship, not when they experience problems and when basically the train left the station, but that they are prepared a little bit earlier, the patient and the partner, and so that they can know what they can potentially expect in terms of side effects, in terms of adjustment, in terms of changes to how they might feel.
That sounds awesome. I think it's great. And you personally, I haven't asked you this question yet. What made you get involved with this?
Well, I think as a psychologist, I was always interested in how patients deal with illnesses, and that led me to examine how patients make treatment decisions, and prostate cancer is a very good model to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
So I became more and more involved with the prostate cancer patients, and so it was really nice for me to see how my work, that is on the one hand very theoretical and basic psychological research, can also translate in more of an applied kind of setting where we can develop programs and interventions that help patients.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that nice translational process that we learn something from our patients and then we give it back by designing programs and interventions that that help them in this difficult time in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Well, thank you very, very, very much for being on the show and chatting to me for almost an hour. It's awesome.
Well, thank you very much, too, on having me. I'm happy to wave the flag for prostate cancer awareness.
That's awesome. And I'm actually on the Movember website right now, and it looks like they're actually doing Movember in Australia, Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, United Kingdom, and the States as well. So.
Oh, good. So we have it here. Excellent.
Yeah, so you do have it. So that's quite lovely. So so across this Canada, which I'm absolutely proud to be Canuck because we're working it here, but as well, it's great that you might be able to participate as well in the States. So
yeah.
I think that's fantastic.
And so for patients who have been, men who have been diagnosed, I would suggest that they visit the prostatehealingchoices.com website to get some more information about our program, or call the toll-free number. That's 1-866-258-7981.
That's awesome. So that's the Prostate Healing Choices, and it's .com?
Yes.
I think that's fabulous. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope everything goes well, and hopefully you'll be in touch with the Movember people as well. So coming up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He will be guiding you into the wee hours with his ambient music and his super awesome voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back next week at the Sexy Hour. Or actually, we will not be back next week, actually, because there is going to be a live broadcast, which is pretty exciting as well. But you'll have to stay tuned to CITR and find out about that. And again, adios, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Here at CITR, we have the best DJs. Think about becoming one at that level. Be one of the 6 lucky winners to attend Tom Lee Music's new to DJing workshops, and you will get a 1-hour one-on-one crash course to learn the basics of cueing, mixing, and scratching, as well as insight into the many hardware and software options available to DJs today. One of Vancouver's top DJs will show you the ropes in Tom Lee Music's Next Level Studios. It's all part of the Next Level Learning Center, offering courses in songwriting, music career development, music business and networking, live performance coaching, software recording, and much more. Tune in to Notes from the Underground, Crimes and Treasons, and Radio Zero to hear your favorite DJ spin, and call in to win your very own DJ workshop. For contest details, visit CITR.ca.